You're listening to Intellectual Erection,
a place where we talk about the naughty.
Just stimulate your thinking.
You're listening
to
Intellectual Erection.
Intellectual Erection.
Передачу, где мы говорим о диспутам,
субъекты
секса. Мы говорим о сексе. Мы
говорим о сексе.
Welcome to another episode of Intellectual Erection with your host,
Patrick.
First, let me start off by saying that the podcast has been doing fairly well. It's gotten a pretty good reception, some good views and listens, but obviously it needs to build. It needs to build a solid, reliable, loyal group of listeners. I'm sure some of you already are on that on board, but for those of you that aren't, have a listen. Participate. So I'm going to incentivize that process. I'm going to offer a small reward, a $50 Amazon gift certificate for somebody who likes, subscribes, and provides a review for the podcast. The review will be taken into consideration by me. My favorite review over this next 2 weeks is going to get picked out. I'm going to talk about it on one of the future podcasts and announce the winner and then make arrangements to obviously give that person their $50 gift card for Amazon. Hopefully that will build a little bit of momentum for the podcast, get more people interested, and make this work. All right, now on to a little bit about the interview. Today I talk with Greg and Edith, a couple from Toronto, and we discuss a lot of the issues of what it's like to have come out of previous monogamous relationships, marriages, and focus on polyamory and what that means as a couple, politically, and the types of changes that we'd like to envision for future polyamorists. Have a listen, subscribe, enjoy. Here again, talking to two famous Toronto sluts. If you guys want to introduce yourselves.
I'm slut number one. My name is Edith.
I'm slut number two. I'm Greg.
He's also a slut.
Yeah, you guys are both sluts. That's wonderful. So why don't you guys tell us what you do, and we'll take it from there, actually.
Like professionally?
Well, whatever you're comfortable with answering.
I'm a personal trainer by trade, but I do a lot of other things.
I'm a programmer, so yeah, I'm just a geek.
A geek. So we have a geek and a personal trainer.
Yep.
And, so then the question's gotta start. It's, how did you guys get into the kink and poly community? It's probably a separate adventure for each of you.
Right. Gee, it's really hard to say when I got into it, per se. I guess I'll start with I've never subscribed to the heteronormativeness of mainstream society. I've always been I've always been bisexual, I've always been slutty for...
Always is a long time. There's gotta be a first inkling where you just...
You know what?
Kind of started exploring.
Even as a young child, I knew I was very interested in sex. Like, ever since I was a child. Like I would find my dad's Playboys and the Penthouse Forum and all that stuff. And I was very, very intrigued and I was very into it. Even as a young girl, I knew I was into this.
Like back in the 50s.
Back in the 50s.
Back in the 50s with the Playboy. And
let's say the late 80s, okay? Oh, the late 80s.
We just found old pictures of Edith from her 20s when she was in the Philippines and she was modeling there. And... So we found pictures of her life, and I'm looking at those pictures, and I'm saying, like, look, your life didn't change. You're still naked in half of the pictures. You're still, like,
you're
partying.
You're still a slut.
it's just the same. Still the same.
It was kind of funny, because I thought I became a slut kind of recently, like, honestly, but when I found this photo album from 15 years ago, I was like, oh my god, I'm actually super consistent to my true self.
Always a slut. You were just in denial for a while, and now you embrace it.
I know. Yeah. So I've always been a very sexual person. I'm very interested in all aspects of sex.
She's undressing right now.
Yeah.
just.
Ah, it's getting hot in here. Mm. Yes, I've always been sexually adventurous. I was married previously, and my husband and I one day decided we want to find a girlfriend. And at that point, I'd never even heard the word polyamory. I didn't know it was a thing. Honestly, I thought we'd made it up. We honestly thought we'd made it up. We were just like,
we're like, we're the first. We're
pretty much.
No one's ever done this before. We're the first.
I hadn't heard of it. I was like, you know what? Let's do this thing. Let's find a girlfriend. Let's do this. And
but this was a girlfriend. This wasn't just like a one time.
No, it was.
This was like a full living situation.
She didn't live with us. She was actually living in New York when we were living in Montreal. Oh. But we were together 4 years as an open triad.
Wow.
And,
that's amazing.
So, but the difference was, like I said, we were really doing it on our own, and we thought we had invented it. We didn't have any community. Like, our friends thought we were just like really weird because they hadn't heard of anything like that.
They're probably jealous.
Who knows? But
so that's how you got into the poly
lifestyle. Yeah. So I mean, like I said, I was always bisexual, and then after I'd been with my husband for a few years, I was like, I really miss having a girlfriend. Let's find a girlfriend. And he initially was actually really not into it. He was really resistant, and he didn't like the idea at all.
He had to be convinced.
He was convinced, yeah. It actually took several years to convince him, to be quite honest. And then we found this girl, and then we had this relationship, and it was great for a while. But then that fell apart for various reasons. And it was only actually when I moved to Toronto and I met this guy where I actually fell into a community.
Which guy?
Not that guy.
This guy beside us. So Greg.
Yep.
Well, we're gonna pick up. So you gave me an intro to the poly, and we left off to Toronto. You meet Greg. Greg, where did you start before you met Edith?
Long story. I was brought up in a very sex negative environment.
Well, welcome to the club.
Well.
Eastern
European club, yeah. And so, yeah, it was a very long journey for me, personally. I got into this lifestyle when I was 37. 37, yes.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's pretty late. Most people already have children by that age, and I was starting to explore my sexuality in 36. That's pretty crazy. But
it's pretty amazing.
It was
hopeful. That's hopeful for a lot. I assume for a lot of people out there.
Yeah, for sure. I know that many people don't realize that they might be into it, and I know that I was one of them. So for me, it happened very easily. I got divorced, and that's how it all started.
How long were you married?
So I was married for about 4 or 5 years, but it was a very long relationship in my life. We lived together for about 12, maybe more years. Like, pretty long. Yeah, it was a
and
very
was
long
just,
relationship.
That was monogamous. That was all monogamy up to that point.
It was absolutely monogamous, and there was no any open relationship. It was out of discussion, anything like that. So it was a totally different life.
So 37 you start, and how do you start? How did you first start?
So I started online dating, and I met this girl that was polyamorous, and she said, I have a boyfriend and I'm going on a date with you tonight. Are you okay with that? I said, that sounds interesting. I always wanted to know about it. And she basically introduced me into the lifestyle and told me everything I know pretty much about the lifestyle. Mm. And she's a very good example of polyamorous relationship, and I like her approach. She taught me a lot. So that was the first time when I got introduced to this lifestyle, and then I realized that I really want to try something like that. So I started to to find my way into this community, into this lifestyle.
So when did you meet Edith, or when did you guys meet?
We met about almost 2 years.
Almost 2 years ago, we met on an app called Happn.
Oh.
Do you know? Yes, it's people.
People actually met on Happn.
Yes, I think we might be
it
the
happened.
Only people.
Wow. You're probably the only couple I've ever heard of that can actually say that Happn was useful.
It happened to
sorry,
us.
Happn. Sorry, Happn. Sorry to the people of Happn. It's just, I've never heard anybody actually use Happn and meet somebody thereafter. But that's
right. It worked. So the backstory for me was I was I was dating like crazy. So, you know, I was like kindering like crazy. And I had two dates in a row. With hardcore Christians. You know, they didn't list themselves as Christians. I didn't know. So I was on a date. The first date, we were getting along great. It was going wonderful. He was a Harvard graduate, for God's sakes. Mm. And at the end of the night, I asked him, oh, what's your favorite book? And he says, the Bible. I read it every day. My. And I was like, what? I was like, I can't see you again. Like, this is not going to work. Second date, right after that, really nice guy, it's going great. And he's like, yeah, I sing in the choir at church. Oh, no, like, I can't.
Church choir, Bible thumpers.
Yeah, and then finally I happened across Greg's profile. What happened? Uh-huh. And he had seven words in his profile. It was polyamorous, my life is good. That was his whole bio. And I was like, sold!
That's still his bio. That's still Greg's bio. Every time I see him.
It is, yes.
Every time I see Greg, it's always, Polly, my life's good.
Yeah, exactly. And so I swiped right on that shit. And then you know, of course, we started chatting. And so you know where he suggested taking me for our first date?
Sick.
Oasis.
I knew you were going to say Oasis.
So, and I'd heard of Oasis, and I had wanted to go. And he was, so basically I said to him, why don't we meet Wednesday night? He was like, Wednesday nights I go to Oasis. It's too much for some. That's exactly what he said. And I was like, no, I want to go. Take me. Yeah. And then, so that was our first date.
That's amazing.
To a sex club.
So we can do another plug for Oasis now. we can plug it in again. I did this also with Vixen Vu. We talked a little bit about Oasis, which is our local, one of the local sex clubs in Toronto.
Downtown Toronto. It's very open and accepting.
It's a spa.
It's a spa.
A fucking spa. It's luxuriously wonderful outdoor heated pool. And beautiful, wonderful people. That's enough about Oasis. Now, so you guys meet about 2 years ago on Happn, of all things.
Mm-hmm.
That means you probably cross paths somewhere, because Happn is a proximity.
It is. It's so people you pass in real life on the street or in proximity. He works a block away from where I live, so that's why we were passing each other all the time.
You guys were passing each other. And okay, so we got to the poly aspect. You guys meet, you both realize you're into polyamory. What about kink? Does that play a role at all in your lives? Are you into any kind of kinky play, or are you mostly into the poly lifestyle?
I think at the base of it, we're hedonists. We're just hedonists.
Aren't we all?
I think if we had a kink, it would be group play.
Group play.
Yeah. Nice. So we're not particularly into any niche kink stuff per se.
Kink or fetish or
not really. Okay. I mean, we experiment, we skirt a little bit, but we're not into like any particular one thing other than just fucking enjoying ourselves.
Well, we love spanking.
I know Greg's spanking. It's a 3-round burst. It's like he's a semi-automatic. 3-round burst. That's how I know. If Greg's in the room spanking somebody, there's three.
Yeah, yeah.
And then followed by maybe another three, depending on how generous he's feeling that night. Yeah. I like Greg.
I didn't know that was a thing.
He's got staples. He's got Gregisms. Which I really enjoy.
Yeah, I think I feel a bit vanilla many times when I have like really kinky people around me, because I feel like they are into it way, way deeper than I am.
I felt that too, but you know what? I think the important thing is, as long as you allow other people to express themselves, you don't need to participate if it's not you, right? But if you're there kind of supporting them just by being, you know, non-judgmental, which is what I know of your behaviors, both of you, then it's fine, because I see a lot of people being like a little bit shamed for being vanilla, and that's just, it's, you know, it's not for everyone. Everyone's got, I think, some levels on which they're willing to go, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah, kinky community is extremely welcoming. It's not you would never feel that you don't belong if you're not into it. You can always consensually watch people play, and it's very interesting. And I am surrounded by kink almost everywhere, right?
Yeah.
And I see it quite a lot, and I really enjoy it. I see a lot of things that I would never try, but it's just amazing to watch.
Right.
And kink
right.
is, there's so many things that can be done in kink. It's amazing to watch always.
Yeah.
Not everything I would like to try. I would like to get more into ropes. I would like to get more into stuff like spanking, but I don't feel like this is something that I really want to do. It's kind
yeah.
of like, eh, yeah, that's nice.
Yeah,
yeah, I'll do that.
I kind of get the same feeling.
Yeah.
Like, and also the learning curve seems like
right.
like you're taking on a lot of responsibility when you get into that.
Right.
So I can see that. But so long as you're, you know, if you don't necessarily participate, so long as you're an ally, that's the idea. Right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that's
and
really
I'm super fascinated about
yeah.
people's kinks and
yeah.
how they approach it. And like our dear friend Asiker is like, it fascinates me to no end. Like,
oh, and he will be here on an episode with a Dom, and that's going to be fun because I've got questions for him.
I know.
I would.
This guy's so fascinating because we don't know him, or at least I don't. I don't know him as a real person. I only know him as
a character.
As a character.
As his fetish character.
As a character he puts on. I don't
yeah.
know anything about him as a fully formed human.
He is like a superhero.
Yeah.
I don't want to take off his mask.
I know.
I don't want to know the Bruce Wayne or the Clark Kent.
I know.
I like his superpowers. I just want to enjoy him as he is.
Right.
You know, I don't want to know, you know, when he...
What he
what,
does
what
in his free time.
Unless he wants to share that, which of course I'd be open to knowing. But
right.
I just love the mystery, I think.
Right. Absolutely.
So then I guess I would want to ask you guys, how do you guys now identify personally, and what aspects of the community have kind of become a part of you?
How do we identify?
Well, I identify as polyamorous,
mm-hmm.
Sex positive.
Awesome.
Yeah.
But I don't like too much boxes like this.
Too many
like
labels.
I don't like
right.
to put.
Yeah.
Too many, who said? Oscar Wilde, I think, said to define is to limit.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
When you define yourself as something, people have expectations from you.
Right.
Yeah.
That's so I prefer not to. But
yeah.
I know for sure that I think I'm polyamorous. This
yeah.
is the lifestyle that works for me.
Well, with polyamory, it's not that you're setting up a box; is that you're trying to break another box, which is monogamy. So
right.
you kind of find another term.
Right.
Right? Yeah. So
I mean,
sounds...
I always come back. Like I always just say I'm slutty,
yeah.
and like and some people don't quite understand what I mean by I'm slutty. Because it has a negative context, I guess.
Yeah,
but like, so when I tell like my friends, like, oh, you know, I'm really slutty, they're just like,
yeah.
they don't quite understand. Like,
we're actively reclaiming that. We're all readers of The Ethical Slut.
Right.
I think we actively try to reclaim that for ourselves. Yeah.
Right. Right. So like, yeah, I will call myself a slut. I'll call my friends a sluts, and it's like, it's a wonderful thing.
I think so too, and I think, you know, it's a very liberating mentality. It feels really good to just be able to be yourself and not have people be able to use their judgment against you.
Right.
People will still judge you.
Right.
But so long as you don't care.
Right, right, right.
Then,
and I have to say, like, when I first came into this community and scene or whatever, one of the most attractive and wonderful things about it was, like, how accepting everyone is, like, no matter what your weird kink is or how you look or what you do or your political stand, whatever. It's just so accepting of everybody. It's
yeah.
just like, you know, and so like a lot of people have like preconceived notions about, say, sex clubs or whatever. But honestly, like, a sex club is way safer and way more above board and honest and open than like a regular
yeah.
nightclub, you know, where guys are like trying to get you drunk and like there's a lot of games going on. There's like... You know, where is it? Where is it, like, in a sex party or a sex club or these kind of things, events that we go to? Everything's very above board, and it's like consent is paramount. And I would say I would actually even say that I'm more discerning about who I sleep with or whatever than like the random drunk girl at a nightclub on a Saturday night. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm making way better choices.
And it's just nice to be able to talk to people about sex openly without blushing and feeling weird and
ashamed,
right?
Right, right.
I'm still blushing anyway.
Yeah, but you're cute when you blush. it's just really validating just to have people be in your corner for a while.
Yeah, and secondly, the other thing that really surprised me, impressed me, is how much power women have in these situations.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because I feel... Like, it's a very women-centric and driven community. I mean, we have a lot of power. More than, like, yeah, again, these nightclubs where...
Of course.
We are being taken advantage of, and there's this game going on, and whatever.
Yeah, they play the classic, you know, men pursue, women withhold.
Right.
And it's that right. banter, the back and forth. And you know what? We can do that in the sex club, too. We can play predator and prey.
Right.
We can play dom and sub. And
right.
We can switch those roles up.
We can switch it,
yeah,
which is
so
amazing.
So the wonderful aspects of it are there. And you can play those out with people, and you can take it to whole new levels. If you guys have seen predator play, predator prey, relationships, they just go, you know, they go primal on each other.
Right, right, right.
And it's they devour one another, and it's
right.
wonderful.
And yeah, yeah, absolutely.
It's wow. Sorry, my mind went somewhere a little bit.
But yeah, but
I was
just
did it give you a boner, Patrick?
Yeah, well, just a little, you know.
But coming into this sort of like scene or community as a woman, it's incredibly empowering and liberating. Like, I was talking to a friend today actually about the whole thing. Yeah, it's like, you know, finally we have control over our sexuality and what we want to do, and it's a place where we can express ourselves and be slutty if we want to be slutty and not be judged for it, you know. And
you don't get those double standards.
There's no double standards, and it's just it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. Like, really.
Absolutely. So then you guys have fully embraced polyamory, and I guess this just came to be for both of you by chance, or is there something that didn't work before that made this happen?
I think my monogamous relationship didn't work for me, and it made it happen for sure. I can say that.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I got divorced is because I felt that monogamy is very hard for me, and it's not my nature. And it was very hard for me.
Was it hard for you? But you did it, or was it hard for you?
Oh, I did it. I know that I cheated, and my ex-wife
knows
that.
That's what I was trying to ask, but I didn't want to ask you.
Did
you cheat?
I did cheat, and my ex-wife, she knew that.
She found out.
she found out, and it was a big thing.
How did she find out?
She
information
read,
to you, eh?
read my messages, and she realized that it was happening. Actually, it was funny because the messages she read had nothing to do with me
with
being
the
unfaithful. Yes,
she read the wrong messages.
She read the wrong messages, but got to the right conclusions. But anyway, it's for me, I felt like this is something that I don't belong to, like this monogamous world. I don't belong there. And I felt really bad to be in that relationship because it felt very dishonest.
Yeah, yeah.
So I felt way better when I started exploring polyamory. I felt like, okay, that this is something I do like way more.
Because you could be ethical about it and be honest with yourself and not...
It not only that, there's definitely an ethical side. There's another side to it. I think polyamory is way more flexible than monogamy. Monogamy is very dictates you all the rules. The rules are set for you. You don't need to think about it. It's just this way. That's it. But in polyamory, you have so many options. There's no like one way to do it.
Right.
You definitely
create your own polyamory.
The way you do it, you discuss with your partners. What are you going to do
which,
and how?
The rules
which
and boundaries.
Yeah, rules.
Which
exactly.
is why I agreed with you that the category of polyamory is not a limiting one. As you were talking about Oscar Wilde, right? Like, you hesitate to put labels, but that one label
exactly,
polyamory
yeah.
is really an umbrella term for just a whole creative enterprise of how you want to build relationships
right.
with people.
I agree with that, yes.
And that doesn't mean that everyone in the polyamorous community is ethical, but... It offers the opportunity for people to I think be honest about their intentions and their needs.
Yeah, and that's exactly the other point that is very important in polyamorous relationship is it makes you be honest in the relationship. You gotta be honest in a relationship. Otherwise, it's not it won't work.
Yeah.
In monogamy, it kind of encourages lying.
Absolutely.
I'm not saying that this is what monogamy is about, but it kind of encourages you to lie because.
Yeah.
If you see a beautiful person walking by, you want to look at that person. just naturally, your head can turn there, but you have to deny yourself that because you're in a monogamous relationship, and it's kind of you lying to yourself that you're not attracted and you're not,
and you
don't want to
feel ingenuine. And yeah, absolutely. And I think that when I ask people, I've had conversations with people throughout my life about this. I've always been fascinated. This is why I'm doing this in the first place. Is just this, to me, this is the most kind of like stimulating type of conversation aside from existentialism. Is I've asked people, how do you stay monogamous, faithful, and not have, you know, the breach of even mentality towards another person? And I don't think there's anything wrong with acknowledging beauty. In fact, I think that's the only thing that vindicates the absurdity of being. That's the existential love going into this. But, you know, you could still have... I never want to shit on people who are monogamous because I know for some people it's the way.
Right.
It's their way and it's extremely uncomfortable to be outside of that.
Right.
So I think there's ways to be monogamous, and I think for the majority of people, in fact, that's the case.
Right.
Maybe either because they, you know, that it's truly the case for them, or they're naive, or they haven't tried something else. Whichever reason, I think there's a way of doing it successfully, and you can
absolutely
be committed to somebody. But what you were saying, Greg, is that when you're dishonest with yourself, I think that really restricts your freedom as a human. And when that happens, you know, the point of existing just ceases to make sense for me. And
right.
that, again, touches on my my ideas about existentialism, which probably don't belong here. But I was in the same situation as you. I've been married. I've had relationships. They've been monogamous, serial monogamous. I have never cheated on anybody in my life. But I always wanted to. I just never could. So my ethics through commitment were just such that I never wanted to hurt somebody by committing the action, but mentally I was there anyway.
Right.
So if we turn back to your Christian dates, Saint Augustine would probably say something like the idea of sin is just as bad as committing it itself.
Right.
So I think we're liberating ourselves a little bit in being just able to be authentic with ourselves.
Right. I mean, I love what Dan Savage, who's a sex columnist and talks often about polyamory and sex positivity. Whenever a caller calls up and says, oh, my boyfriend watches too much porn or whatever it is, I feel like I'm not enough, which is a common thing. I feel like I'm not enough.
Yeah.
And his standard answer is, well, that's because you're not enough.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, no one, you can't find everything in one person.
Yeah, do you have one friend?
Yeah, exactly, right? So it's a lot of pressure for that person to be the everything for
you.
You
can never live
and
up
it's,
to it.
And it's super... it's a lot of pressure for you to be everything to them, you know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't work. And I have to say, like, I feel my life is so much more full and open and complete with different people who fill different needs I have.
Absolutely. I think that's a perfectly reasonable response. All right, so I'm curious now. I want you guys to take me through kind of an average day in your life, and just kind of show me where your so-called normal life kind of intersects with the poly, maybe the kink fetish lifestyles, even if it's not your own, but just in general, like your work, your friends, your family. I'm just curious how these things intersect in general, because
so,
for some people it's hard, for some people it's easy.
Yeah, so we wake up and first thing in the morning we drink a nice cup of warm baby's blood, and then we go and kill some kitties and puppies, and that's pretty much...
And then we fuck everybody!
Yeah, and we fuck everybody that we see, everybody.
Right.
Yeah, that's
that
pretty
sense.
Much the...
That's like my day.
That's your day, yeah. But that's probably pretty much the stereotype that people have about all of us perverts, right? Like, we're doing something like that. I don't know. We have regular lives.
Yeah, you put on your pants one leg at a time.
I tried both.
In your case, you have three legs, so you gotta go 1, 2, 3.
I don't know. Obviously, we both have normal jobs. We're somewhat professional.
Somewhat.
This is two bottles of wine in, by the way.
we just losing your professionalism here.
But I think we're both pretty open about our lifestyle and what we do. Or I'm at least for me, I'm becoming more and more open about it. I think there was a time where that was one private section of my life, and I didn't speak to anyone who's part of my real life. You know, it's two very separate entities. And then I just really felt how fake that felt. And now I'm super open about it. So if someone says, where are you going tonight? I'm like, well, go to a sex club. Like, I'll just, like, just throw it out there. And it really stumps some people.
So you guys are generally pretty honest about your polyamory with your friends, co-workers?
Co-workers, not me.
Not you, because you're a nerd.
Well,
because I'm a nerd. And my co-workers are, too.
Your co-workers are going to be coming out of their eye sockets.
Yeah, there's only, like, two people at my work that know that I'm polyamorous. And, it's not like I'm keeping it a secret, it's just nobody asks me, right? I'm not going to go to my coworker and like, oh, see this this line of code you wrote? I'm polyamorous.
You go home and play World of Warcraft and fall asleep to whatever, Mr. Robot.
Actually, I love Mr. Robot. It's pretty awesome. I love it.
The new season came out. It's like I couldn't remember what the hell happened in the previous seasons. Anyway, back to coworkers, friends, okay, family.
Not really. I wouldn't say I talked openly to my mother about it. I posted something on Facebook about how I was polyamorous and stuff. I posted like a link to a New York Times article about the growing trend, polyamory or something like that, and I was very open about my stance. And my mother liked it. I swear my mother liked the post, but I don't think she fully understood what I was talking about. I think it just like went straight over her head. But she liked it.
That's good that she has a general like support.
My mom knows, my sister knows about me being polyamorous,
mm-hmm.
and my mom is playing it cool. Sometimes it's obvious that she's not into my lifestyle at all, but mostly she accepts that, and I think, yeah, there's a double standard here, and it's way easier for guys than for girls to come out as polyamorous and
to their families.
Yes, it's weak. Guys can get away with stuff with more than that, but mm-hmm. for girls it's way more strict, so I can imagine that.
Yeah, there's a whole
it's a reputation
which girls have to uphold for whatever way.
Exactly. For us it's like your reputation goes higher if you that for guys, and for girls it's totally the opposite. So, absolutely double standard.
Like we're cave people. We just, you know, the men, they gotta spread their seed. Women, they gotta procreate, have the babies. So, you know, one gets to fuck around.
Have all the fun.
Funny enough,
evolutionary psych 101.
cavemen were more into polyamory than we were, and we are now.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. It's funny.
And it worked out. Look where we ended up. We have skyscrapers and flying planes. So they did something right. What do you guys think is the most difficult part about being part of this community?
Well, polyamory in general. I would say time. Just time. Just not enough hours in the day. Like, say if you do want to have a relationship with two or three people or whatever,
mm-hmm.
Time's the biggest limit and the biggest challenge. You know, how do you give your primary partner enough time and yourself enough alone time and work and maintain relationships, intimate relationships with one or two or several other people? I think that's the most challenging
time management
and making sure everyone feels that they're getting enough time and are respected enough. And
well, if you think about it, there are way more obstacles if you want to be polyamorous. First of all, you cannot get married and have like a polyamorous union as
as
a marriage.
You can go Mormon.
No, but recently the first three-way marriage, it was a three-way gay marriage actually between three men in Brazil happened. Oh. And it's legally recognized as a three-way marriage.
Cool.
Between three men.
Yeah, that's the thing, is it's obviously, I hope it will change in the future, and it will maybe open this the path for way more people recognizing something like that legally.
It's funny how that's the gateway. It's like you got to get the you got to get the civil and sort of like religious acknowledgement for this union, even though maybe many people in the community don't want that either. They don't want those constraints, but I guess there's legal benefits and whatnot to being married. But just marriage in itself as a concept, I think a lot of people that that are part of the poly community might have kind of distaste for it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, myself, even if I would find myself, I am in a very serious relationship, but getting married is not really something we are pursuing actively, because we've been there. We know it's just a paper, and it's not that, not more than that.
It changes nothing. Yeah.
Right, but what I'm saying is not necessarily that polyamorous people want to have official marriage, but there's you can be recognized as common law. Instead of that, there are other implications to that.
Yeah.
Like, for example, you can have your health benefits shared with your with your partner, and other things, right? So for those purposes, polyamory is disadvantaged. Because you can't basically register.
You don't get the legal benefits. You don't get the
exactly
the legal benefits. Also, if you're trying to parent, I presume, and it would be probably very difficult if you're in a three or more person situation to have
to establish guardianship or whatever
legal guardianship over any children that are raising that.
So there's like a lot of things that has to be done before polyamory becomes normalized in the society. Not only acceptance by people, but also there's a lot of legal stuff that is on the way. And I think we just got used to that this is the way, and we kind of like not saying anything, but actually it's a problem. Like if I want to have two girlfriends and I want to share my benefits from health benefits at work with both of them, it's a problem. And I'm not saying that now insurance company has to pay more money for both of my girlfriends, but whatever budget I have for one person can be split between two. It also might work if it's our choice, right?
Right.
And I mean, there's a lot of things that can be done for it to work. I think states should recognize that polyamory is actually not a bad idea economically, because household, polyamorous household is way more stable than just regular household with two people.
Mm-hmm.
With two people, with one, more and more, right?
Yeah.
It's getting more and more relevant. If you have one person that's fired, you still have two people that work and can still
Sustain the family.
Also, if you have children, it's way easier to take care of the two children.
Right.
One person wants to go out and wants to go on a date. You still have two people staying at home watching for children, babysitting, or even two people can go.
There's a lot of practical benefits.
There's a lot of practical benefits that are not recognized by the mainstream society, and all that because they want to hear polyamory. They hear, oh, perverts. Oh my God, this is bad, and this is very low for them.
Like,
but it's actually not bad.
So
our relationship goals, Greg and I. It's really funny because when I first met him and things were starting to get serious, one of the first things he said, he was like, okay, if we're going to get more serious, you have to understand that I want two girlfriends. That's what I want. And I was like, awesome, because I would love a girlfriend too. And I had just come out of like a triad relationship. So that's what we were looking for a while. And so that's our goal, to be in a triad. That's I really love that dynamic. I think we're great in that kind of dynamic. And
you guys have four girlfriends?
That's too much.
Too many, yeah.
Like I said, time. There's not enough hours in the day.
There's this concept, term, polysaturated. It's when you have too many partners and you don't have enough time.
And just emotional space and energy. It's very tiring.
Yeah, it is. It is. Dates are tiring. They're exciting, but they're also tiring.
So you guys still think that, so aside from even the legal encumbrances that poly couples or poly families encounter, what do you think about the societal views of polyamorous people?
Honestly, I don't think that many people know about it, really. Like, it's still... Like, I feel like it is coming more and more to the mainstream. But I don't think that many people really know. Like, whenever I bring it up to, like, acquaintances or whatever, they don't really know. They have no idea what it's about.
Yeah. I had... in my dating profiles, I was stating that I'm polyamorous.
Mm-hmm.
And
my life is good.
I have to say that about 80% of people would ask me what that mean. What does it mean?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, and
right.
Most people don't even know that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think there's also a difference, like between like true polyamory and people who are just dating a lot of people. You know what I mean? Like some people.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, because it's also right. You can have different kinds of poly. There's solo poly where you can just be on your own, but you're dating multiple people and you're just kind of open,
right,
and honest about it,
right,
so that your potential partners know who they're getting involved with and what kind of situations they're going to encounter, maybe potential risks. Then there's polyamorous couples that will have hierarchies, right?
Mm-hmm.
That will be, we're primary and then there's secondaries and metamors and so on, and we date other people, and then there's triads and it goes on from there.
Right.
I think people are getting a little bit more educated maybe now about poly communities, because I see a lot of the younger generations. When I say something like poly, they know immediately what I'm referring to. I don't even say polyamory. If I just say poly, they automatically know. So I think maybe we're on the cusp of something new here, of people being a little bit more open or aware.
Yeah, I agree with you that I get the same feeling. The new generation is way more open to it.
Mm-hmm.
Not only open to it, it's more aware of like things like polyamory and other things. And it makes me really happy about the new generation growing up this way. It's way better than me starting to discover this in the age of 36.
Yeah. Do you feel like maybe you missed out a little bit?
Yes. I feel I feel about like FOMO, like 16 years old FOMO.
Mm. 16 years of... fear of missing out.
Yep, exactly.
Wow. I think you've made up for lost time, Gregory.
I'm pretty sure you have. Do you think there's still any like persisting misconceptions that that maybe people have about poly, kink, fetish communities?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say something. I frequently, like I mentioned, I call myself a slut and my friends a slut or whatever. And I'm very, sex positive. And some guys seem to think that I will sleep with anyone and I will sleep with them because...
You mean that's not true?
I'm extremely discerning, actually. But, guys will message me on FetLife or whatever. Mm. And, obviously I have lots of pictures up. I'm very open about everything there in particular. And they will just assume that I'm down to fuck anybody. And it's, like, totally not the case.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's just, like, they just think, like I'm easy or something. And it's not that.
So that's the assumption.
It's absolutely not that. That's the assumption.
The assumption is that we're all just hedonistic.
Yeah.
Waiting, seething.
That I'm, like, that classic slut, that high school slut type or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's,
blows
like...
blows everyone at the party.
Yeah, it's totally not that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's one misconception that maybe, like... some guys who want to get into the scene who aren't actually in the scene and don't understand how it works, they think that, these girls are just like, fuck everyone. No.
Yeah.
Actually, they're like, I kind of alluded to earlier, I think girls in the scene are more more aware of their choices and what choices they can make and are more discerning. And will frequently say no more than, again, I'm just going to use that drunk girl at the club sort of...
Yeah. And you tend to make less mistakes that way as well, I think.
Right. You're just more aware of what you're doing
and
what you're in.
I think it's the same misconceptions that I think the, the gay rights community had, trans rights community has, where it's just constantly people thinking that you're just some pervert trying to get acceptance for some perversion that is unnatural, taboo, unnecessary, or should be subdued in some way, right? Oh, what's next? We're gonna be fucking dogs.
Yeah, they put everything like into the same basket, like
right.
Homophobia, like everything, transphobia, all of it comes from there. People are like, oh yeah, what's next?
Yeah, what's
you're
next?
Gonna
pedophiles,
like pedophiles?
And bestiality,
yeah, like,
yeah, of course.
Yeah.
We're all just in the same basket.
Right. I think
well,
people. Our society is very have very negative approach to sex, and it all grows from there. It's like it goes. It's homophobia, transphobia, all of it comes from being very afraid of everything that sex can bring to you.
Someone who enjoys sex, who openly enjoys sex, is like suspect, you know what I mean?
Yeah. You're not supposed to enjoy it. You're supposed to just do it and
right.
You know.
You're not supposed to revel in it.
Yeah. You do it once in a while, you have some kids.
Yeah.
Shut up about it.
I think fetish is also very misunderstood in the society. First, the biggest mistake probably that people make is thinking that kink and sex go together. They don't have to.
Yeah.
Kink has doesn't have to
sometimes
involve
no
sex.
Sex.
It just doesn't have to be sex
right,
at
so
all.
Some kinks are independent of what people typically associate with.
Absolutely. Yeah, obviously
sex.
It can be a part of the sex for sure.
Yeah.
But
oftentimes
it doesn't
it's a mental
role.
It's
yeah.
it's mental
yeah.
fuckery.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
It's more it's yeah, exactly. It's
fuck
more
my
like
my mind so hard.
I see,
right. I fucking mentally came.
I see kink as kind of like a drug. You're basically trying to alter
right.
state of your mind.
Right.
Right.
And instead of taking substances, you just use your body to generate hormones and whatever to get to a different state
right.
of mind. And it actually does work this way, and it's amazing how it works. Like if you have ever seen orgasm denial session,
mm-hmm.
that's
right.
one of the craziest things.
Orgasm
that,
denial, edging.
It's
mm.
it's insane that how you can hack human body
mm-hmm.
and it just works. It's just like insane. It's
yeah,
amazing.
Yeah.
I love it. Yes.
You just gotta push the right buttons and
yes, know. Exactly. We have buttons that can be pushed. It's insane. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like you know you have this whole circuitry, this whole panel of buttons, and some people are just fond of pressing like you know one button, and we're just kind of like we want to play with the keyboard and see, you know, see what some other buttons do. That doesn't mean that you know we want to fuck with all the buttons. Right. There's some buttons that maybe you don't want to play with, but at the same time, it's I think there's a misunderstanding that like once you open up the or rather I should say once you allow one kink, one fetish, one instance of polyamory, you open up the floodgate and suddenly the whole world of perverts is going to overspill and you know everyone's going to the whole world's going to go to shit.
Right.
I think that's some of the fear in the more maybe traditional societies. And I think this is why it becomes difficult for us to share these things with our families. Because so far from what I've spoken to people, everyone's excited. Everyone's really happy about participating in this because they're liberated. They feel finally, they're like, I feel like myself. And
right.
I like sharing that with people that I meet.
Right.
I like sharing that with people that I know.
Mm-hmm.
And I like being part of that social atmosphere of people that accept what this is. And it's ethical, it's slutty, it's fun, and it's liberating.
Right.
But if they have to talk to their family about it, suddenly there's a few more inhibitions.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, you know, there's still a sense of shame. There's still a sense that we know the older generation is not prepared to handle this information, and you don't want to be seen as that person in your family, and you don't want to be brought up at every family dinner. You don't want to discuss it necessarily all the time with people's
with your uncle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't wait for slut shaming to go away. I think it's one of the biggest problems with our society. Our lives would be way easier.
I wouldn't go biggest. Slut shaming is on there. It's on the list.
In the scope of this of human sexuality,
right? In sexuality,
yes,
slut shaming. Yeah, it's a big one. Of course. No, I agree completely. It's crazy how we're still a little bit divided in that. You know, there's gonna be a way And I think I'm going to run into some people who have talked to their families and get a little bit of the lowdown on that. Because I think a lot of us are still in the closet with our families about these sorts of things. I mean,
it's
you don't
true.
Even when you're monogamous, you don't really share that much with your
mm-hmm.
with your family. It's just expected. It's like, yeah, they're dating. They must be having sex. But if you have, you know, two boyfriends, two girlfriends on at family dinner,
I actually know a triad that have to hide it.
Yeah,
they live as a triad,
but they have to, yeah.
But yeah. One of the girl's parents are not okay with this thing, and I know that the father doesn't know. And when they come, all three of them, they introduce their other girlfriend as
a friend.
Oh, this is a friend.
It's a friend. Yes. It's very hurtful for those people.
Yeah, it sucks, but you know,
it's insane.
It's
when you can't be open, like live your life
yeah.
openly. Like
yeah.
it's you might be you can be proud of your partners, you can share it with your parents, you can
mm-hmm.
share it with you can share it openly. It's a big problem.
Yeah,
well,
it is a big
yeah.
problem.
And we're just not set up with the parameters to be able to have more than two.
Right.
You know, you go to a company outing, right? What do they have, like a Christmas party, and they're
right.
like, well, who's your, you can bring your plus one.
Yeah.
Oh, what if I want to bring my plus two or three?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
that's exactly what happened
yeah.
to me. That's
I'm,
how I had to
yeah.
come out at work because the girl that was organizing the
mm-hmm.
parties at our
do you have
work,
a plus
she's
one,
like,
Greg?
You want to bring your girlfriend? I'm like, can I bring two?
Yeah, can I bring two? what? Well, yeah, that's the kind of stuff that we still have to face and kind
right.
of deal with, and that's why I'm hopeful for the next generation. If I'm hearing more people being open to this, being interested, being curious, being accepting, then I can at least think that for our future generations, there's going to be more accommodation for these instances. I don't expect I don't expect any of this stuff to happen tomorrow, and I think it would be a little too shocking for a lot of people for it to happen so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But time does, you know, does allow,
right.
does have these affordances.
And like podcasts and other publications like this that are shedding light on this situation and that we're normal, functional members of society.
Yeah.
yeah, it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, we pay taxes and shit.
We do pay taxes.
We pay taxes.
Yeah. And a home of three pays taxes.
Right.
Just like home of two or...
Yeah, and that yeah. what I said about drinking baby's blood, it was a joke. It's not real. We don't do that.
Oh, come on. I was
yeah.
excited.
You were?
I wanted some baby's
that's a
blood.
Kink, I'm sure.
I'm...
oh,
I don't
baby's
know
blood.
About
oh,
that. God. You just ruined it. Yeah, now everyone's going to think
that's
we're fucked up.
This podcast right. will be like, will be marked now. It's, all
right, we're getting
okay.
baby
unsuitable.
Friendly. That's the end of it.
Thank
right.
you. Thank you so much for having us.
Well, until next time, when we dive into more serious or less serious topics, who the fuck knows?
You're listening to Intellectual Erection,
a place where we talk about the naughty.
To stimulate your thinking.
Вы слушаете интеллектуальную эрекцию.
A place where we talk about the naughty.
כדי לתת לכם קצת חומר למחשבה.
So when I get to these podcasts and I start to edit them, one of the things that I do is take out lip smacks like this. Because nobody really wants to hear lip smacks throughout the entire audio. And what I realized through this interview is that both Greg and Edith do a lot of lip smacking, just like me. And I've decided to compile it together in our first symphony. This is the Slut Trio Symphony of Greg, Edith, and Patrick, called Symphony 69. Enjoy.
And then we fuck everybody!
And then we fuck everybody!